This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Welcome, Carm Capriotto, the Service Aftermarket's podcast pioneer. Join me each week for aftermarket insights from my guest host. Catch up on our weekly content, and as always, know that you will learn just one thing. The video of this show is on the Aftermarket Weekly page on remarkableresults.biz or on my YouTube channel. We are serving the automotive service aftermarket with the best-kept secret to personal networking right here. It is Rob Merwin from Aftermarket Matters, one of the best newsletters we have in our industry. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Carm. Great to be back on.
Thanks, man. If Rob is here, we're talking about news. We're talking about stuff that's current. We're talking about what's happening, man. And Rob is bringing us some really great articles. And the shop tour today is from Charlie Marcotte. Hi, Charlie.
Hey there, Carm. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Thank you, man. American Pride, 4 shops in Virginia, and we're going to do something that we've never done before because Charlie loves to stretch stuff. He loves to stretch my personal thinking, and my personal thinking is, Carm, we'd love to do it, but let's do all 4 shops. And I said, okay. So he filmed all 4 shops, and we have a beautiful, beautiful run through of his great places. I think you just saw one of the pictures there. Hey, if you're with us on social media, we'd love to have you check in with your city. Give us a like, a comment, share this. We're live on Facebook and LinkedIn and my YouTube channel. We're coming to you live from the Dorman OE Fix studio. And it's always great to have Dorman here as a sponsor. By the way, Charlie, how's business?
Business is great. Typically, the back-to-school season tends to be a little bit of a slowdown, but we're not seeing that just yet, so we're very grateful for that.
Man, it just continues to rock. I mean, Rob, you're talking to shop owners every week. You hear the same?
I do. I think, despite school buses running around the neighborhood, my own personal technician, he's still going gangbusters. So, yeah.
So one of the great questions in my mind is it ever going to slow down? I don't know. I don't think so, because Rob has an incredible statistic that he's going to share with you about how many shops have closed. And that could be one of the reasons, right, guys? Thank you again for Dorman. Modern steering columns are collapsible, made of an inner and outer sleeve. In a frontal collision, the sleeves compress like a telescope, allowing the steering column to absorb energy from the crash, reducing impact on the driver. Dorman's steering shaft is engineered with strict tolerances to directly replace the original shaft on certain vehicle years, makes, and models. Dorman has rigorously tested their steering shafts to meet Federal Motor Safety Standards through press-out, tensile load, salt spray, on-vehicle fitment testing, and more. These standards specify requirements for minimizing chest and facial injuries through steering systems that yield forward, cushioning the impact on the driver. These systems also limit rearward displacement of the column into the passenger compartment, further reducing the likelihood of serious injury. Hey, want to know more about Dorman? Visit dormanproducts.com/tour. Man, they're always releasing new products each and every week. Great company. Hey, guys, in case you want to go to my website and find out anything about my guests, search for Rob Merwin or Charlie Marcotte on my website, and you'll see all the great shows that we have done together. Hey, I got to tell you, from the bottom of my heart, if you've not listened to one podcast all year, you got to listen to this. I have never had more feedback and letters, texts, messengers than I have over this episode. It's emotional. It's heartfelt. It's smart. How to help? What can we do? All about addiction. David Wagner, Brian Holthy were kind enough to come on and say that they're recovering addicts and to hear about their story. So, Rob, thanks so much for being here. What's in the news, my friend?
Before we get started, I thought it was interesting what Charlie said about business being good despite schools getting kids going back to school. Why do you think that is, Charlie? Is that pent-up demand maintenance, deferred maintenance because of COVID? What's driving that? What's different from this August and September from 2019's August, September? I think that's really interesting.
Boy, I sure wish I knew the answer to some of those questions. We always have a plan B and a plan C in mind. And to answer Carm's concern, I do think it is going to slow down, and we have to act as if it is. Frankly, our shops have gotten a little bit sloppy in our processes because we've had too much work and we've been saying no to too many customers. So there's a certain desire for things to slow down a little bit so that we can get back to sharpening our saw. It's just been mayhem, as you know, for the past 18 months. But why is it, not slowing down just yet? I don't know.
Okay. So, Carm, so you asked me to talk about several things. One of them is what's ahead for independent repairers right now in these interesting times? We've got right now grabbing the headlines, of course, is the chip shortage, lack of new car inventory. So what does that mean for the aftermarket repairers? The used cars are gaining more VIO as a result of lack of new car sales. So how do we capitalize on that? And what's around the corner if there's an explosion of new car sales once that chip shortage gets resolved, which, by the way, latest reports I've read probably won't get back up to speed until sometime in 2022. So what does that mean for us? So there's a lot of opportunity there, though, but while at the same time, the dealers are getting in on the action because they don't have the new car sales driving their revenue. So very similar to the economic downturn of 2008, they're amping up their service and repair business and trying to get those used cars into their bay. It just almost seems like history is repeating itself. There's always this tug and pull between the aftermarket and dealership service. It ebbs and flows. At some point, you just have to ask, why can't we all just get along? the dealerships need us. For the amount of cars out there on the road, there's not enough dealership service base out there to handle the entire car park. So they need us. We need them.
We recommend an awful lot of cars to buy because of how easy we know that they could be fixed and availability to parts. So we really do help them. They are in total denial that they need us in any regard. And sometimes they don't play nice in the sandbox because this whole data thing, let's not go there, but it is amazing how the challenge of the dealership has taken our best operators and kicked them up a notch. The kind of service that we get. I mean, we're given better customer experience than the dealer. They can't even get out of their way. They stumble all the time. And we're doing so many things better. Thank God the dealer's there to push us to do this stuff.
That's right. As an independent repairer, we've got that customer service. Everybody talks about customer service to the point where, what does it mean anymore? But truly, the independent repairer has that outreach to their community. They're involved in the community, and they have that personal touch that is difficult to get in corporate. Interestingly, during 2020, it's been reported that 6,000 repair shops closed. And I think that's probably a function of some shops just not being prepared for it, lacking capital, the bank account to weather the storm. And the dealerships are capitalizing on that because I think they have the resources to weather the storm.
Rob, it's an amazing number, 6,000 repair shops closing. It has really set up opportunities for shop operators that would like to grow. So I'm not sure. I'd love to find out. This data came from Lang.
Lang Marketing, yes.
It's a great company, good people. I met Jim Lang once, a really nice guy. And, I'd love to know if those 6,000 that closed, any of them went to other independents, or are they just off the face of the earth? And how many bays does that equal? That would be another interesting piece. I'd like to see that. But, Charlie, I mean, that could be one of the reasons. I don't know about in your marketplace why everybody's so busy is because there's less places to go to.
In our area, we're in between rural and city. We only have population of 75,000 in the two counties that we represent. We haven't seen any closures, but I do agree that the new car dealer lots are very scarce. When the Ford dealer has Toyotas on the front line parked on an angle to try to fill up the spaces, I just can't imagine being a salesperson for a new car dealer right now. And the if you've paid attention to the advertisements on TV, Ford is inviting you to come in to place an order for a car. I mean, when have you ever heard that before? You know, it's always been to come in to buy a car. Now they want you to come in to place an order. They're having to adjust to some crazy dynamics.
Take a look at the RV industry. They're placing orders right now because there's such demand and there's the supply chain disruptions and problems. And so it's not surprising to hear, Charlie.
One thing's for sure is that we are in a terrific industry. We are doing, as an industry, we are doing great. We have weathered so many storms in the past. I just can't imagine a better industry to operate a business within.
So I mentioned those 6,000 stores closing, and Carm, you touched on it a little bit, but there's opportunity. Maybe Charlie, you're among them for shops that are well positioned with the resources to take advantage of shops that just kind of want out of the game. You know, some of these shops maybe weathered the storm of the 08 crash, and they just don't want to do it again.
We bought a shop back in July of 2020, and I'm confident that we could not have bought that shop had it not been for COVID. COVID wore that operator down, and he was ready to step aside. So we took advantage of that. Since that time, we have made 5 offers on 5 different shops. And each shop, although I think that they were very fair offers, they should have considered them more seriously. They've all come back and said, you know what? The economy looks pretty good. I think I'm just going to wait it out. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're buying their time. I do think that there's going to be some great opportunity to buy shops. It may not be today, but I'm hoping it's within the next 12 months.
Mm. Well, good for you, Charlie, and congratulations on that acquiring. That was your 4th location, I guess.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
I know Brian Bates. He's part of the Napa Business Development Group here in the Denver area. Yep. And Carm, you know Brian. I know he just acquired 2, maybe 3 shops. So he might be up to 5 now.
Yeah, Brian is a phenomenal operator.
Yeah, ironically, he will be with me Friday on the Town Hall Academy.
Great.
And I will share with you the title of that in a little bit. Let's talk about this other incredible trend that you brought with here, Rob, which I find fascinating.
Large mobile repair operators getting into the market. They're getting private investor funding. According to recent news reports, private capital is getting involved and they're expanding their reach into their marketplace. And that's a function also, I think, of COVID. People don't want to leave their homes. They want to be safer, and they want their repair coming to their driveway or their work of place. RepairSmith, for example, just raised $42 million, and they're going to target rapid expansion. That's a lot of money. And you have to ask, how far is this going to go? Investors are investing that kind of money into mobile repair. What does that tell you? These guys, they're not throwing money away. They've done their research, and it's interesting. So what does that mean for the brick and mortar independent repair? I don't know. It probably comes down to what region you're in, your marketplace. Again, it's a wait and see. I think it's really interesting. And we've got Your Mechanic also. They just launched an app for their mobile repair. And there was, in that story, their CEO said something that was really caught me. It was, quote, we're 10 steps closer to making auto repair as easy as ordering pizza to your door. But that could be a wake-up call. It's just amazing.
It's worthy of a show to flush this out. But you know, after I read that this week, or it was last week's newsletter, Rob, I'm reading that and I'm thinking, okay, who's going to let mobile overtake their market or their share? And I start thinking about all the things that so many have been doing right that would thwart it. It would be a totally exceptional customer experience. I mean, way up there. You know, people want to shop today and tactilely touch clothes and not buy all that stuff on the internet. People want to come to a shop, see what's going on there. But also the shuttles, the loaners and the Ubers make that transparent, if you will, I believe, than somebody setting up in my driveway. But it's, you know, capitalism will find a way. Entrepreneur, you know, you just don't get in front of an entrepreneur who's got passion. Automotive repair like pizza. I mean, that is just off the charts.
Right. And, you know, it could be viewed as a threat or it to the traditional independent repair business model, or it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
It depends what your own personal take is. But right now, you're a mechanic. They're in 3,000 cities in the U.S. right now.
Amazing.
And they've just had their highest quarterly consumer revenue to date in the company's 10-year history. You don't have to be a genius to see where that's trending. And it's up to independent repair. How are you going to do it? Threat or opportunity? What do you think about that, Charlie?
I'm a member of the Transformers Institute out in Colorado,
right.
And we had this discussion earlier this month. The conclusion that we came to was, while it appears to be a threat, it's not as big of a threat as it might look like on the surface. I see mobile repair as more of an advertising opportunity. So if you had a van that said mobile repair or American Pride Automotive mobile repair, you're going out to assess a situation, and most often the response to the consumer is, I think we need to get this into the shop. You know, but you're establishing communication, you're establishing trust in a relationship, and you're giving them what they want, which is convenience. But the reality is, you cannot conveniently repair a person's car in their driveway. Half of our neighborhoods in the area would prohibit that. I mean, there's no commercial activity. And when you enter into the possibility of leaky fluids, noise, a jack stand, that's just not going to fly. But if you put an articulate person behind the wheel, maybe a senior technician who is, needs a more easy, physically active job with a scanner to go out there and assess the situation, maybe we can replace the battery. Maybe we can clear a code. Maybe we can provide some data. But to really fix your car, we need to get this into the shop. I can arrange to have a truck here in 15 minutes. Would that be okay? Mm-hmm. You know, there's the advertising opportunity.
Maybe it would be a hybrid kind of position, a hybrid service advisor / technician. That would maybe it's a new role.
Yeah, it's all about the optics.
That's a great idea and worthy of continued discussion, everyone. Rob, thank you so much for being here from Aftermarket Matters. Great news stuff. Thank you for keeping on the edge of all this really cool trending stuff. This Friday, as I was kind of teasing you with a little while ago, I want $1 million for my business. That's the topic of our discussion with CPA Hunt Demarest, with Brian Bates, as we had just mentioned, and Joe Hansen. Both Brian and Joe are multi-shop owners. They've probably sat down across from a shop owner that says, by the way, don't waste my time. I want $1 million for my business, and they can't prove it. And so we're going to discuss this as we continue to do so many shows on succession planning, which is really what this is all about. So please tune in Friday at 12 noon. We'd love to have you. Charlie, you're on deck. We are going to get a tour of American Pride. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go. So this is one of our shops. This is the Newtown shop, the one we just purchased. And these are, as Carm had mentioned, we're covering four shops. These are very quick videos. But I've seen this show where I've seen some beautiful repair shops, Garage Mahals. Multi-million dollar investments. And that's not my business model. We are more basic, more simple. We've developed some processes and procedures that we're going to point out during these videos. The first one would be that we operate off of a three-person model. We have two in the front counter. You just saw Connor and Michelle. Michelle is a service advisor. Her job is to sell. Connor is the service rep. His job is to assist Michelle with all customer needs. Customer walks in. The person you just saw there was Brock. I'll come back to him. But when a customer comes in, they speak with Connor, allowing Michelle to focus on the sales process without interruption. Connor cashes them out, and Michelle takes all of the upsells or all of the information, relays it to the customer in a clear and concise manner. Brock is the service director. So he's typically the shop manager, some would call it, but he's directing traffic. All opportunity, all repairs go through Brock, and they're given out to the right technician looking for maximum efficiency. Our shops are not grand and beautiful, but they're very efficient. The four shops that we have are producing about $7 million in revenue, and we can maintain a 15% net profit. And we do that by, we didn't overspend on the shops. You know, these were purchased for between $500,000 and $700,000. They were buildings that were used for something else before that we repurposed. You know, so our investment was minimum, which allows all of our expenses to be a little bit less than industry standard.
This is a gorgeous place. The grass, the flowers, the fencing. It is incredibly hometown.
Well, 73% of our customers are women. And when we talk to the women that come in, we want to know what's important. The number one thing is a clean bathroom. It has always been the case. So we really emphasize clean bathrooms. We emphasize a homey feel. You know, I just read a report on Monday about the number one customer concern or need when they come into our general repair shop, and that is how quickly were they recognized and what was the enthusiasm when they were recognized. So we really focus on those things that seem basic, but they really matter. You know, if you're on the telephone with the customer, you know, you don't just say, I'll be with you in a minute. You know, you can use that as a sales tool with the customer that's on the telephone. You know, hey, Mrs. Smith, I'm so sorry I'm on the telephone. I'll be right back with you. You know, please grab a bottle of water. You know, the customer who hears you on the telephone is also impressed by that. So here is Billy in the red shirt. He's our service director for this shop. So the service directors in all of our shops, their desks are in the shop, you know, because they're the visual management person. They're giving out the work. They're seeing what needs to be done. When a technician has a question, they go directly to the service director. You know, we don't want technicians hovering behind the service advisor asking questions. We want that service advisor to be completely focused on the sales process. Clear, concise communication. You know, once again, our shops are not grand and gorgeous, but they're very efficient. It's a good use of space, and there's no wasted space. I can guarantee that. The person you saw at the front counter was Anthony. He's our service rep for this store, which is the Williamsburg Airport Road store. But, you know, you say that you never want to go into the kitchen of a restaurant. You know, this is our kitchen. You know, the technicians are busy. There's lots of noises, lots of smells, lots of activity, but it all stays behind that wall. And the customer experience is all about comfort, cleanliness, friendliness. You know, we really try to focus on what the customer wants. This is the Toano shop. Now, these first three shops, they're all within 7 miles of each other. There's a 3.5 mile radius from the one in the middle. We have chosen to dominate our little market. James City County only has 75,000 people. But I find that we are a convenience-based service. You know, the customer has to have a need, obviously, but then they find the solution to their need by what's convenient. And location means everything. You know, so we chose to put shops very close to each other. They're all the same name. They're all American Pride. But if you live in one neighborhood, I can tell what way you exit the neighborhood, what road you drive on. I can tell what direction you go on the interstate. I want to intercept their pattern of travel so that we provide them with a convenient solution. This little area is our accounting department for all four stores. You know, very modest, but everything goes through this location for accounting purposes. That front counter has the same model. Service advisor focused on selling, service rep focused on customer interaction. There's William. He's our service director. Once again, his desk is in the shop. From that desk, he can see all activity. When parts come in, he checks them in. When cores go out, he checks them out. All technicians that have questions, they go to William. Now, this video was taken at about 5:10 last night, so we're not normally empty, but we do clean up at night and we get ready for the next day. So I can guarantee you this morning, they're busy. Once again, nothing fancy, you know, just a basic 60 by 100 foot building, six bays, and every square foot is consumed. Parts storage is minimal. You know, we don't want to have to inventory and keep up with parts. We have great service from Advance Auto Parts right down the street. They are there probably every 15 minutes throughout the day.
So, Charlie, you said 73% of your clientele are women. How do you explain that?
I think the woman has the buying authority in almost all families. And we prefer that. I mean, I would prefer to operate with a woman customer as opposed to a man customer any day. They go off of gut instinct. They're emotional. And when you can express empathy, you know, that's exactly what they want. They're not trying to prove themselves like some guys would. They just want to be treated with respect. Our value statement at American Pride is respect earned, respect given, respect felt. We want not just our employees, but also our customers to earn respect, to be given respect, and to feel respect. You know, all of our waiting areas, they're all modeled the same colors, the same idea, the same black leather, the same burgundy walls, the same oriental carpets. It's supposed to feel like your living room. No pressure, fresh coffee, good coffee. We open up the opportunity to have some communication from the front counter to the customer if there happens to be somebody waiting. We don't want to shovel them off into a small room to the side and leave them to their own devices. You know, we try to present a family atmosphere that we know their names, we know their children's names, we know their dogs' names. This shop is a little bit bigger. This one is in York County. It's a 10,000 square foot shop, has 11 bays. So there's more space. This is our oldest shop. We've been in business since 95. But that desk right there, you know, that's a big desk. Kevin is the service director. He's quite the woodworker. And every time I went down there, he was expanding his desk. It's like a throne, but he's very effective. Lots of stuff takes place at that desk. And this, of course, Kevin took this video for me last night. It was after closing hours. There were no technicians there. There were no cars in the shop. It's not glorious. And what I was hoping to present through this video montage is that the person or the company that has an average shop, there's just as much opportunity for extreme success as there is in somebody who has the ability to build a $3 million repair shop. Our industry is, like I've said before, I think it's the best industry to operate within. And some creativity, talking to other shop owners, attending great training like Transformers, allows you to see what other owners are doing. You pick and pull from what works for you. And you adapt processes and procedures that are just bulletproof. Each one of our shops is designed to be a silo able to operate on its own. And rather than having one large conglomerate, we want to plant individual silos. And we're actively looking to put more silos on this little narrow peninsula that we are on and continue to dominate the market.
Great strategy, Charlie, to truly own the market. Place by, you know, how closely knit, if you will, netting. You're catching people within their 2.5-3 miles of influence.
Well, it's a lot of responsibility. You know, you're putting your name out there. You are, when you're trying to dominate, you better be good and you better be willing to fall on your sword if you make a mistake, because one bad word can affect not just one shop. It's affecting all the shops because people are very close. So it's a high level of responsibility that we take very seriously. And, you know, we fight for our reputation. You know, we build it, but we also defend it.
Well, thank you so much for bringing us the four store tour. It's a first. I mean, we've had multi shop operators on where they've just highlighted one of their shops, but it needed to take my friend Charlie to push the bubble and get us these four different videos that we stitched nicely together for you. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. A lot to learn. Great story, and the processes and the systems drives your success, and we could see it the way the sameness appeared just about everywhere. And I'm sure that the decisions that are made inside of each individual store are universal to how decisions are made. Hey, thank you so much for that. Now, don't forget, the podcast gets repurposed each and every Saturday. You can catch us on YouTube. You can catch us on your favorite podcast listening app and on the website, remarkableresults.biz, on the AW page. Next week, Sam Craven is going to be with us from the Garagisti in Houston, Texas. And Lee Foreman going to give us a tour of his new store, the Dynamic Team's new store in New Market, Maryland. And I was there about 2 months ago with their 25th anniversary. So,
just off topic a little bit, but Industry Week is coming up. And if it were to happen today, everyone would be required to wear masks at both SEMA and Apex.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, the mask requirement came out, and a lot of it still, Rob, tell me if I'm right or wrong, it has to do with what's going on in Nevada.
That's right. It's a state government-driven policy that presently all indoor events require masks. Now, for Apex, presently you're going to be required to have your proof of vaccination. And if you don't have proof of vaccination, I believe it's required COVID testing. And again, masks. SEMA is taking more of a wait-and-see approach before they declare anything. So SEMA will let their policies be known as we continue traveling down this road toward Industry Week.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Rob. You can find these press releases just about anywhere about it, but we're still a little bit away, and the way it is so fluid, we don't quite know. But if you've got a vaccination, it's going to be a whole lot easier for you. There is no doubt about that. Thank you so much to Rob Merwin from Aftermarket Matters and Charlie Marcotte from American Pride in Virginia. Guys, appreciate it. Great, great show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.